Imagine turning away a paying customer at your physical cash register just because your card machine thinks they are holding a credit card, but they are actually holding a debit card.
Right, yeah. You would literally never let that happen in a real physical store.
Exactly. I mean, you would just look at the physical card, see that it clearly says debit right there, and you would just run it through.
Yeah, of course.
But if you are processing card not present volume today, well, your software is probably doing this exact thing to you like hundreds of times a month, and it is happening completely in the dark.
Completely in the dark, yeah.
So, welcome back to the My Pay Advisor operating floor. We are really stepping right into the numbers for today's deep dive.
You definitely are.
Think about your monthly operating statement right now. You are a U.S. merchant, and you process somewhere between, say, $25,000 and $5 million in monthly card volume.
Right. That is our sweet spot.
And you have a very specific goal today. That goal is protecting your margins. I mean, we are not talking about top-line sales here.
No, not at all.
Or like new marketing spend. We are looking squarely at the bottom line, the actual money that is just draining out of your accounts during the checkout process.
And we really need to anchor this conversation in reality right away because the sheer cost of doing business is just climbing at an alarming rate right now.
Oh, it really is.
I mean, the latest data from the Nilson report paints a very sobering picture for operators. So, total credit and debit card fees paid by merchants to card processors, it hit $198 billion in 2025.
Wait, 198 billion. That is just
Yeah,
massive.
it is a 70% increase since 2019.
Wow.
So we are not looking at some, gradual curve. That is a massive spike in your operating costs. And it basically means every single percentage point of margin matters way more now than it did like 5 years ago.
Yeah, a 70% increase is exactly why we were opening this deep dive today. Because I was reading through the new BIN routing for higher approvals, the 2026 operator guide this
Oh,
week.
yeah, it is a great guide.
The numbers they are showing for revenue recovery are just wild. So our mission today is really mapping out a recovery strategy based on that specific data.
Right.
We are looking at how operators who are processing, $500,000 a month or more can recover 1 to 4% of their net revenue.
Which is basically found money at that point.
Exactly. It is found money. And the core strategy here is routing high decline bank identification numbers or BNNs to a second acquirer.
On the surface, building a multi-acquirer routing system, it sounds like this highly technical, massive infrastructure
Oh,
project.
yeah, it sounds terrifying for an operator.
Right. But it is actually just a structural fix for a broken communication chain. Because
Yeah.
before you can capture that 1 to 4% recovery, you have to really understand the mechanics of a decline.
Okay, let's unpack this because we need to walk through the life cycle of a single transaction just so we can spot where the actual failure points are.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, when a customer clicks that checkout button, there is a very specific relay race that happens in like milliseconds. Let us walk through the actors involved. First, obviously, you have the cardholder submitting their data at your checkout.
Right, the starting point.
Second, that data goes to your gateway or maybe your orchestration layer, and that layer extracts the first 6 to 8 digits of the card number, to figure out the card type and the issuing bank. So what happens next?
Well, the third actor is your routing logic. And if you only have one acquirer, the logic is incredibly simple. The transaction just goes straight to them, no questions asked.
Just a straight pipe.
Exactly. Fourth, that primary acquirer receives the request and they forward it to the Visa or MasterCard network. And finally, the fifth actor is the issuing bank itself.
Oh, okay, the issuing bank.
All right, so the issuer looks at the request, they run their own internal risk rules, they check the account balance, and they ultimately decide whether to approve or decline the transaction.
And that decision point really hinges on those first few digits of the card, right? The
Right.
BIN. But the rules around those digits recently changed, and that seems to be where this whole system just started fracturing.
They did change, yeah. And the fracture is actually massive. So back in April 2022, the card network shifted from a 6-digit BIN standard to an 8-digit BIN standard.
Wait, why did they do that? Just ran out of numbers.
Literally, yes.
Yeah.
They had to address global numbering exhaustion. Just think about all the new neobanks, digital wallets, and all these fintech startups issuing cards globally over the last decade or so.
Oh, true. There are so many now.
Right, so there simply were not enough 6-digit combinations left to identify all these new card products. The networks had to add 2 more digits just to expand the pool.
Okay, so the networks expand the pool to 8 digits. I mean, honestly, that sounds like a fairly basic software update.
You would think so.
But the problem is that not everyone in the payment chain actually bothered to update their software, right?
Yeah, and that is the major vulnerability the 2026 Operator Guide points out. Acquirers that fail to refresh their BIN tables to the new 8-digit standard, they are routing cards using stale assumptions.
Stale assumptions? Wow.
Yeah, they are looking at just the first 6 digits. They guess the product type based on old data, and then they send that flawed data over to the issuing bank.
Which means the issuing bank sees a mismatch. They see a difference between what the acquirer says the card is and what the bank actually knows the card to be.
Exactly.
And that leads directly to the core finding of the guide. They found that card-not-present approval rates actually vary 3 to 8 percentage points across different acquirers on the exact same traffic.
It is crazy.
Yeah, like if you send the same batch of transactions to processor A and then to processor B, you get wildly different results. And the guide notes that gap gets even wider when you look at international BINs.
Well, the variance exists because not every acquirer has the same issuer relationships,
mm-hmm.
right? Or the same updated BIN tables, or even the same fraud risk tolerance.
It makes me think of like different bouncers at a nightclub.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, like you could have a perfectly valid out-of-state ID, but one bouncer looks at it, does not recognize the new 8-digit format, assumes it is fake, and just rejects you right at the door.
Right, yeah.
But then you take that exact same ID to the bouncer at the club next door. That second bouncer has actually updated their training. They recognize the out-of-state format immediately, and they just wave you right through.
The bouncer analogy works perfectly.
Yeah.
Because the failure is happening before the ultimate authority even makes a real decision, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, the ID is valid. The customer definitely has the funds. The failure is entirely on the door staff.
But wait. If this data is, you know, locked away and operators are constantly getting turned away by that first bouncer without even knowing why, how does this stay hidden for so long?
It is a good question.
Because the Federal Reserve tracks aggregate card volumes, right, in their payment study series. They have massive amounts of data on the U.S. payment system. So if the variance is 3 to 8 percentage points, why is this completely invisible to the average merchant on the floor?
Well, that is the structural blind spot that operators face every single day. The Federal Reserve does a fantastic job tracking aggregate volumes at a macro level, sure. Yeah. But they do not publish per BIN approval data.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, that specific, highly actionable data sits locked inside individual acquirer dashboards. It is literally one of the most underused assets in card-not-present operations today.
Because most merchants just assume a decline is just a decline, right? Like, they assume it is based on the customer's lack of funds.
Exactly. They do not realize that if they could actually see the data categorized at the BIN-on level, they would spot these glaring inconsistencies. They would see where specific banks are failing at unusually high rates.
So if merchants are flying blind because the Federal Reserve does not publish this and the acquirers keep it all locked up, then operators must just be guessing why these transactions fail.
Basically, yes.
Is that why we see so many of these super vague decline cons on the operating statement?
It is the exact reason.
Yeah.
When merchants cannot see the BIN level data, they just completely misinterpret the decline codes they receive.
Yeah.
And we have to talk about the single biggest culprit of lost margin in this ecosystem.
Oh, let me guess.
Which is response code 005.
Yes. The dreaded 05. The literal text for code 05 is do not honor.
Right. Do not honor.
Which, I mean, it sounds like a stern warning, but it really does not tell you anything useful at all.
No, it doesn't. And according to the operator guide, code 05 is the single largest decline reason at most card-not-present merchants. It makes up like 30 to 60% of all declines.
Wow, up to 60%.
Yeah. It is classified as a soft decline.
Mm-hmm.
Issuers basically use it as a massive catch-all bucket. So whenever their internal risk rules trigger, but they do not want to specify exactly why to the merchant or maybe to the fraudster, they just throw a code 05.
Okay, so as an operator, I look at that and think, well, it is a soft decline. The card is not reported stolen. The account is not closed. It just hits some generic algorithmic rule, right?
Right.
So why not just build a rule in my gateway to instantly run the transaction again? Like, just hammer it. Run it every hour until the issuing bank finally proves it.
And see, that instinct is exactly what gets merchants into deep, deep financial trouble.
Really? Why?
You cannot build soft decline retry loops with no back-off logic. Visa actually has specific rules to prevent that kind of brute force attack on their network.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, they have something called Visa integrity fees. These fees specifically penalize repeat retries on the exact same authorization within a 24-hour window. So if your system just hammers the network, Visa flags it immediately.
Wait, so every time my system automatically retries that 05 code without a proper delay, I am getting hit with an actual penalty.
Yes.
It is not just like a one-time slap on the wrist.
No, the fee stacks per offending transaction.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, if you set your gateway to retry every soft decline 3 times on the same merchant ID within that window, you pay the penalty 3 times. A merchant can easily rack up thousands of dollars a month in these fees.
That is insane.
And what is truly fascinating here is that these fees rarely appear as a clear, defined line item on your processing statement. They just sort of roll silently into your overall interchange dump. It is just an invisible drain on your margin.
That is brutal. I mean, you think you are fighting for a hard-earned approval, but you are actually just triggering automated fines in the background.
Exactly.
Your processor is literally fining you while you try to save the sale. So knowing that we cannot blindly retry transactions without racking up massive fees, we really have to look at the root causes.
We do.
We need to identify the structural blind spots that are causing these soft declines in the first place, you know, rather than just treating the symptom.
And there are specific technical failures we can isolate. The guide points out 3 major structural blind spots that cause these issues.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Let us break down the actual cost of these technical failures. Starting with those stale BN tables you mentioned earlier, how does an outdated 6-digit table directly hit the P&L?
Well, the math on stale 6-digit BN tables is very clear. Let us say you have a transaction that should route as a Visa consumer debit card. Now, debit cards have lower processing costs, naturally.
Right.
But because your processor is using outdated tables, their system misreads the newly issued 8-digit BN. It falls back to old data, and it codes the transaction as a Visa consumer credit card instead.
And credit costs significantly more to process than debit.
It does, yeah. That simple misclassification lifts your interchange cost by 50 to 100 basis points. So if you are a merchant doing, say, $500,000 in monthly volume, a 60 basis point misrouting cost runs you about $36,000 a year in just unnecessary fees.
$36,000?
Yeah, you are paying a premium purely because your processor has lazy database hygiene. And honestly, that does not even account for the transactions that simply fail, because the issuing bank spots the mismatch, realizes the product type is wrong, and just throws a code as 05.
So you are paying significantly more for the transactions that actually do manage to go through, and then you are losing out entirely on the ones that fail.
Exactly.
If stale BIN tables are the first technical failure, what happens when the table is correct but the geography triggers a false alarm? Let us look at the second blind spot, which is cross-border BNs.
Right, so cross-border traffic is a classic example of outdated risk logic really hurting good operators. A U.S. merchant sees a card issued in, say, the U.K. or Germany. Many standards gateway risk rules will just auto-decline non-U.S. BINs if they exceed a certain threshold.
They just block them.
Yeah, the gateway treats them all as high risk for fraud, just to be safe.
But the operator guide shows why that blanket ban is such a costly mistake. Like, let us say your average order value is $145.
Okay.
If you can get just a 4% approval uplift on a 12% international slice of your traffic, that nets you roughly $5,000 per month for every $500,000 of volume.
That is significant.
It is. And even though the Visa fee tables show that cross-border interchange rates are naturally higher, that revenue uplift easily justifies the cost. You are just walling off your highest average order value segment for no good reason other than, like, geographic paranoia.
Yeah, you are literally leaving premium buyers outside the club.
Exactly.
Now, the third technical blind spot is network token misalignment. And this happens frequently with subscription businesses.
Okay, how does that work?
Well, your vault stores the primary account number, the standard 16-digit PAN. But the acquirer is expecting a network token for recurring billing. A network token is basically a secure, self-updating digital stand-in for the card.
Right, the tokens.
Because of the mismatch between what you send and what the acquirer expects, the recurring authorizations get downgraded to non-tokenized status.
Yeah.
And when that happens, your approval rates on recurring billing drop by 2 to 5 percentage points.
2 to 5 points. So it is like trying to get into a high security corporate building.
Right.
Yeah. You have a valid driver's license, which is your PAN, but the security gate has been upgraded to only read RFID key cards, which are the network tokens.
Right.
You are legally allowed to be in the building, but the scammer literally cannot process your old ID, so you just get rejected at the turnstile. You have the right product, the customer wants to pay, but the plumbing is just broken.
That is exactly what is happening.
Which raises a really important question. If the math is this clear, and we are talking about tens of thousands of dollars a year in lost revenue and stacked penalties, why are merchants not fixing this immediately? Why not just add a second acquirer today?
Well, contract blocker.
Contract blocker.
Yeah. Many merchants are locked into full-stack processors that have exclusivity clauses embedded deep in their service agreements. These clauses mandate that the merchant must route all qualifying volume through that single primary processor.
So they are legally blocked from sending those high decline bins to a second bouncer. They are just trapped.
Legally, yeah, they are restricted. But practically, everything is negotiable once you reach a certain volume threshold. The operator guide points out that at $850,000 in monthly volume, the public terms referencing volume commitments are highly negotiable.
Good to know.
Because if an exclusivity clause prevents you from adding a second acquirer to catch those drop transactions, that restriction can cost you 1.5 to 3% of your authorized volume.
Wait, how much is that?
Well, for an $850,000 a month merchant, that translates to roughly $12,000 to $25,000 lost every single month just to honor a contract clause.
Which means negotiating out of that exclusivity clause is totally worth the effort and probably well worth the legal fees.
Oh, without a doubt.
But to really prove it, I think we need to look at a real-world P&L. Let us walk through the exact case study from the 2026 operator guide just to see how this actually plays out on the floor.
Sounds good.
So we have a direct-to-consumer health and beauty subscription brand, and they are processing exactly $850,000 monthly with a $145 average ticket. What was their baseline reality before they fixed the routing?
So they're running on a single acquirer, a major full-stack processor. Their rate was a blended 2.65% plus 10 cents per transaction.
Okay, pretty standard.
Yeah. Their overall approval rate was 84.2%. However, when you looked closer, it dipped down to a painful 71% on their recurring subscription rebills.
Yikes. And if they are a subscription brand, that 71% rebill rate is basically a death sentence for customer lifetime value. I'm guessing their decline codes were heavily skewed toward our old friend Code 05.
They absolutely were. Code 05 accounted for 41% of all their declines.
41%.
Oh, wow.
But the real breakthrough came when they analyzed the bin data. Those soft declines were heavily concentrated on just 6 issuer bin ends.
Just 6?
Just 6. 19% of their attempted volume was getting snagged on just 6 specific banks.
So if they know the problem is isolated to 6 specific banks, I mean, they cannot just call those banks and demand better treatment, right? They must have built a bypass. Did they just reroute those specific 6 bins to a new processor?
They ran an A-B test. They kept their primary processor for the bulk of their volume, you know, just to maintain their negotiated rates.
Smart.
But they added routing logic via an orchestration layer. So when a transaction hit a soft decline on those 6 specific BNNs, the system instantly routed the transaction to a second acquirer within 4 seconds of the first decline.
Within 4 seconds. So they give the second bouncer a chance to look at the ID before the customer even knows there was a delay.
Exactly.
Did it work?
It worked incredibly well. Recovered authorizations went from 0%, because they had no retry mechanism before, right up to 38%.
38%?
Yeah, they saved nearly 4 out of 10 transactions that their primary processor was literally just throwing in the trash.
So what does this all mean for their bottom line? Let us calculate the final P&L impact.
Well, lifting that overall approval rate from 84.2% to 88% generated a massive gain. It meant $32,300 per month in newly authorized volume.
That is huge.
Now, the second acquirer did charge a slightly higher rate. It was 2.75% plus 10 cents. And the merchant, obviously, had to pay for the orchestration layer to run the 4-second routing logic.
Right. There are costs involved.
But even after paying those higher processing fees and the new software costs, the net annual benefit to their gross margin was about
$200,000. $200,000 a year added to the bottom line, simply by routing the failed traffic to a system that could actually read the updated IDs.
It is just incredible.
The math is clearly proven here. So now it is time to execute. We are shifting gears to the operator playbook. If you are listening to this on the floor right now and you process between $25,000 and $5 million a month, what should you do this week?
Step 1 is data extraction. you need to pull a BN level decline report from your gateway for the last 90 days. As we said, you cannot fix what you cannot see.
Right.
And when you request this report from your account manager, be highly specific. Ask for the 8-digit BN, the issuer country, the product type, the attempt count, the approval count, the decline count, and the response code distribution.
Okay, and then step two is segmentation. Once you have that report in your hands, you need to segment the data by country and response code. You want to focus all your energy on the recoverable buckets.
Yes, very important.
Do not just look at a spreadsheet of raw numbers. Group them logically. Look for codes 005, 51, 65, and 91. These are your try again later codes.
Right.
They represent insufficient funds, generic SARF declines, and communication errors. But you need to completely ignore hard declines like 04, 14, and 41.
Yeah. Do not waste time on those.
Because those represent lost, stolen, or closed accounts. Routing logic cannot recover a dead card. So find your top 20 high decline BIMINs inside those soft decline buckets instead.
Exactly. And step three is verifying your foundation. You must ask your primary processor, in writing, if they maintain Visa and MasterCard BIN tables at the 8-digit standard effective April 2022.
In writing.
You need a clear, definitive yes or no. If they give you a hedged answer or if they claim it's proprietary and try to dodge the question, that is your immediate signal to start drafting an RFP for a new processor.
You really have to force the issue here. Do not accept vague assurances from an account rep when we are talking about your hard-earned margin. Make them put it in writing.
Completely agree. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, I just want to leave you with a final thought directly from the operator guide.
What is that?
Most merchants running on a single acquirer never see their per bin approval data. They just look at the blended average approval rate on their dashboard and accept it as a normal cost of doing business.
Which is a mistake.
Right. If your gateway refuses to produce this 90-day report, you're flying blind. But the very first time you pull this report and actually look at the bank level failures, you were almost guaranteed to find a 200 basis point surprise waiting in your own data.
200 basis points of pure margin hiding in plain sight, just waiting for you to route it correctly. It is your data. Demand access to it this week. Do not let one bouncer turn away good business when the door right next to them is wide open and ready to process the sale. Take control of your routing, protect your margins, and we will see you on the next deep dive. Have you checked your dashboard today?